So Easter, I've called this the Great New Day of Hope. I've got a question for you first. Has anyone here ever seen a dead body come back to life? No? No one's seen a dead body come back to life. I've actually seen a dead person, but I haven't seen them rise from the dead. So naturally speaking, sadly, the facts of the matter is that this doesn't happen. And the people in those days weren't stupid. No, they weren't stupid. They knew that people don't come back to life. It would need something very, very powerful to convince them that Jesus had risen from the dead. What would it take to convince you, sitting here, that someone came back from the dead, from the grave? It's got to be pretty powerful, hasn't it? Okay, now, what's this? Magnifying glass. See my big eye? So, Becca, can I just pick on you? Who normally uses one of these, would you think? Give you a slight clue. Detective, yes, a detective. So what we're going to do this morning, very briefly, we're going to be a bit of a detective and look at some of the evidence. But I want to say that what I could focus on, there are just three things really, but what I could focus on the fact that Jesus appeared to many people. He appeared in a locked room to a bunch of disciples, and he kind of said, "Come and put your hands in my side where the spear went, and in the nail marks in my hands, and see that I'm not a ghost, but I've got flesh and bone." It was the same person that got the scars on the cross that appeared to them, and he had come out of the grave. I could talk about that, but I'm not going to focus on that evidence today. I could talk about the fact that the disciples were radically changed all of a sudden from being cowards and chickens to being brave people. Now, these disciples were chicken. They were scared. They were behind locked doors because they were terrified that they too would be crucified. And then all of a sudden, something happened and they go out preaching, bold as brass, even willing to pay with their heads or pay with their lives for preaching about Jesus. So something amazing happened to them. And the impact of the resurrection, it's a little bit like a meteor hitting planet Earth, landing in the ocean. Now, if a meteor were to hit planet Earth and land in the ocean, there would be a ripple effect. Not only did it transform these cowardly disciples, it also affected all of society, so much so that many of us don't realize just how much Jesus, his teaching, and the resurrection have affected us even today. This is more for the grown-ups. I can recommend a book, which I've been looking at, by Glenn Scrivener. You've heard of him? It's called The Air We Breathe. And what he argues in this book is that the resurrection, Jesus, his life, has so affected the air we breathe without us realizing it in Western society. Things like equality, kindness, freedom, consent, compassion, progress, things like that are all affected by the resurrection. Now, I could talk about that, but I'm going to very quickly go to what I do want to talk about, which is this, the empty tomb. You know, it seems that the empty tomb was enough to convince these disciples. Something about it gave them what is called a light bulb moment. They thought, there's something about this that cannot be explained away. Now, the first person to the tomb, according to John's account that Karina read, was Mary. Mary Magdalene, not Mary, the mother of Jesus. And she was very sad. She had watched her hero die on the cross, and she was probably thinking, "I must have got it wrong. How can my hero and king die like this?" But she gets up in her sadness. She goes to the tomb, pays her respects to this dead king. When she gets there, she notices something. Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So Mary's first thought was, grave robbers. Because ordinarily a stone would block the entrance. It had been moved. We're so familiar with this story that we know what happens. But for them, it was grave robbers. It was the final twist of a knife for poor Mary, whose heart was already broken. Someone's gone and nicked his body. That's what she thought at the start. She goes and tells Peter and John, and they have this little running race where they run to the tomb, and I think John is more speedier than Peter, and he gets there first. And I've shortened, I've just taken a few parts of this verse for the sake of time. It says, so Peter and the other disciples started for the tomb, both were running. Then Simon Peter, when he gets there, he saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Now here's the big thing. If you were a grave robber, do you know what you stole from a tomb? You stole the cloths. The cloths were what was valuable. The linen cloths were the thing that you could clean up and resell. And they were quite valuable. And maybe some of the spices too. But you wouldn't bother taking the body. The body's useless. So when they go in, they see the cloths are there. We can't have been grave robbers then. Okay, well, maybe it was the authorities who nicked it, you know, the Romans. Well, why would they bother to take Jesus' body out and take just the body and leave the cloths? Wouldn't they just quickly whisk the whole lot away and unwrap him later? And also, there were, some people think the cloths may have been very, very strange in that they weren't all messy like someone's bedroom could be. If you ever had a young person, they can sort of have an untidy bedroom. It wasn't like that. It was as though Jesus had risen up out of the grave clothes, and everything was still as though he'd been lying there, and he's almost like he'd come through the cloths. And it's like, this is very, very strange. And it says this, that one of them, John, when he saw all of the linen cloths that hadn't been nicked by robbers, wouldn't have been in the authorities, and it looks as though he's just risen straight out of the cloths. It says this of John in chapter 20 verse 8, John saw and believed. Okay? He believed. Now, I don't know if you realize this, but John had already seen earlier in his gospel somebody come back to life. Hands up if you know his name. It's in John chapter 11. Alex. Lazarus! Right. Occasionally in the Bible, Jesus did raise from the dead about three people, I think, and one of them was Lazarus. And John had seen that. But when he saw this, he realized there's something massively different here than what happened to Lazarus. Because you know when Lazarus came out of the tomb, the stone was still in place. And Jesus had to tell people, move the big heavy stone. It took about 20 people to move that stone, people think. Quite a lot of people, anyway, definitely more than one or two people, to move such a heavy stone. That was still there. So that was different to Lazarus. And the other thing was, when Lazarus came out, in John chapter 11, if you want to read it, he came out looking like a Scooby-Doo Egyptian mummy. Has anyone ever seen the Scooby-Doo program? Where it's like this sort of mummy from Egypt comes out. He came out all wrapped in cloths, and Jesus said to them, unwrap all the cloths, set him free. Completely different here. The cloths are folded up, undisturbed. And also, we know that Lazarus died again. It doesn't say it in John's Gospel, but Lazarus would have died again later. So really, Lazarus was simply reanimated. And his poor, poor family had to go to his funeral twice. Imagine that, going to someone's funeral twice. He went into death, Jesus called him out, and then about maybe 10, 20 years later, he went back into death again. Can I have a volunteer, please? I need someone to hold this. Julian, can you come and do it? Come on. It'll be so easy for you, but just hold that, please. Okay, now, I need another volunteer. Alex, can I... Actually, could you stand in front of the, is it right if you stand in front of the microphone, because they'd go on the camera? Right, could you take that ball and throw it in the tube, that end? Try not to hit the people in the crowd. Right, now, death is like a tunnel. Death is like a tunnel. Lazarus went into death, and he's trapped. And then Jesus called Lazarus out. Can you call him out?
Wow.
Can you tip it? Tip it, I think. Right. Lazarus was alive again. But 15 years later, or 10 years, we don't know how long, he died again. So can you throw it back in? Right. And death is like a tunnel. It's got a dead end. And human beings are trapped in that tunnel. Right, if you tip it out, please. Just right now. This one with the bells on is Jesus. So when Jesus went into death... No, well, yeah, he did come out. He didn't come out of that end. Go straight in. Right. Now, this is what happened. He punched a hole through and... Can you tip it that way? And Jesus punched his way out of death and came into something different to Lazarus. He came with a physically resurrected, glorified body that was indestructible and that would not die again. Not like Lazarus, who, you know, snuffed it later again. Jesus defeated and conquered death. Thank you. You may sit down. Sorry. Thank you very much. That it was the victory over death. And I just need another volunteer now. Two volunteers. We're coming to the end of this now. Two volunteers. Can you hold that black cloth and just show everyone? It was one of my kids' jumpers, but... now, death is described in Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, as a shroud or a veil that covers all the nations. It says in Isaiah 25 verse 7, the shroud that enfolds all people. And we cannot go through death. We go into death and we're stuck. But Jesus, he, if you like the analogy, is like a needle. Have you got insurance? This is a big, big needle, and I want you to stab it through the cloth. Well, don't stab her. You penetrate through the cloth and come out the other side without killing your sister. I'll just hold it a minute. Go on. Right. No, take it out the other side. Yes. And Jesus is the only one who is able to penetrate through death and not have a Lazarus syndrome, but actually come out the other side with something new. And here's the rub, or the big truth. Here I've got some orange thread, okay, and this orange thread represents us. Can you thread the needle, please? This orange thread represents the people of God, those who trust in Jesus Christ. Yep. Right, take it right back. That's it, all the way down. Right now, can you punch it through death, please? All the way through. Right, and pull out the other side. Now, God's people will go through death with Christ attached to him. So if you trust in Jesus Christ, I can guarantee you, as sure as eggs is eggs, if you excuse the phrase, I can guarantee you that you will pass through death, and you also will have a resurrected, glorified physical body and a future. And death will not be the dead end or the shroud that you can't get through. You see, without Jesus... we can't get through this. We stay in the cemetery. But through Jesus, there will be a future resurrection. So thank you. Let me sit down. You've got a few chocolates as well. Yeah. So it's a great new day, what Jesus has done. There's the thread and the needle. The life beyond this life, you're not going to be a floaty kind of blob floating around. Like, that's a film called Soul. Don't know if anyone's seen it. The kids' movie. And everyone who dies becomes a kind of floaty blob. Whereas that isn't what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that you one day will have a physical glorified body again. It's going to be different to this one, but similar. So, as you recall, the title is Easter, a Great New Day of Hope. And I've put part two, Hope at the End of Our Story. Now, I don't know if you like stories with a happy ending. Maybe you can think of a story with a happy ending. One of my favourites is the film Matilda. I love that film. And there's a very happy ending for Matilda. But the resurrection of Jesus coming back to life, defeating death, and showing us that there is going to be a resurrection. Not just a floaty ghost, but a physically glorified body, shows us there's going to be a happy ending to your story too, if you trust in Christ. The resurrection wasn't just some random one-off thing that happened to some amazingly different person. It was a launch day for a new beginning. And there's a picture of King Charles cutting a ribbon, inaugurating or launching something or other. Don't know what it was. And there's a picture of a champagne bottle smashing on the side of a ship. You know, when they launch a ship, the way they launch it is they smash a bottle of very nice champagne, and it's a launch. And the resurrection was a launch day. It was, in fact, the dawn of a new creation. A bit like a trailer of something that's to come. You know, if you've got a movie that you like, you sometimes see the trailer showing you what's going to come. There's a new film out called Dune 2. Don't know if anyone watches Dune. Dune 2. And I was watching the trailer of it, and it's promising what's to come. And that is what the resurrection is, the dawn of a new creation. And John's gospel, different to all the others, often connects the resurrection with a new creation and with Genesis. Let me just quickly explain. You see, all the other gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, all talk about Jesus rising on the third day. The third day. You know, he died Friday, rose Sunday. The third day. John doesn't use that expression very much. In our reading today, which Karina read, it said early on the first day of the week. And what John is saying is, this is the beginning of something new. It's the first day of a new creation. And then he also goes on to say, if you've noticed in chapter 20, verse 1, early on the first day, while it was still dark. Now, John has an interest in Genesis, the creation. And if you remember how the world was created, it began in darkness. Genesis chapter 1. Verse 1 talks about, in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. And it talks about, verse 2, sorry, darkness was over the surface of the deep. So it's about a new beginning and a new creation. John's gospel even begins a bit like Genesis. You know, Genesis starts, in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. Well, John's gospel starts, in the beginning was the Word. Jesus. And we haven't got time to read it today, but if you were to keep reading John 20, and I recommend you do, you will find that Mary, when she sees the risen Christ, she mistakes him for a gardener. She imagines he's a gardener and says she thought he was the gardener in chapter 20, verse 15. Who was the gardener in Genesis? Adam. What is happening here is John is saying Jesus risen from the dead is a new Adam. He's a new human being, the new race, the new Adam, like the gardener of old. And what he's saying there's a new beginning, a new race of people begun at the resurrection. And if you keep reading John 20, you come across a very weird verse, which I never understood. It's a bit later on in verse 22, and it says that Jesus breathed on the disciples. Now, I don't know if you've ever had anyone breathe on you. You know, you probably go, ooh. But Jesus breathed on them, and you think, what is that doing there? Well, go back to Genesis. How did God create life in Adam? He breathed into his nostrils, and Adam became a living soul in Genesis 2, chapter 7. And what John is sort of hinting at is, with the resurrection, with what Jesus has done, he's going to breathe new life into a new race of people after his resurrection. And then us, the church, we can then give that life to other people. It's a symbol of the creation of Adam. And what John is saying again and again and again throughout chapter 20 and throughout his gospel is Jesus brought a new beginning, a new creation, like Genesis. On the level of Genesis, a big thing. God broke in, came to a fractured, sin-cursed world, and he launched something new with a happy ending. You know, previously, every life ended up the same way, defeated in death, in the cemetery, at the crematorium, futile, the end. But not anymore. God has broken into our story in the resurrection, and he's shown there's a new direction for everyone, a new day, a new beginning, a new hope, a new creation. And that's what John is very interested in his gospel. So what does this mean for us as we go home in a moment? But it means you can live for God. You can live for Jesus sacrificially. You can give yourself to the Lord, because what you do in serving him will last forever beyond this grave, beyond the grave. It's not a waste of time to give yourself fully to the Lord and his church, because there's going to be a resurrection future life. And you can live in hope. If you see bad situations in your family or in your life, and things are difficult and things aren't improving, I want to promise you, as I'm standing here, there is going to be a glorious future for you, even though we do all die at this point. But God has brought a new day.